Good evening. Welcome to the November 8th, 2018 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members, please. Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
My phone, apparently.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I have a couple of proclamations this evening, and first I wanted to ask if anybody is here from the home health care, home health AIDS group. Is Beth Harrington here? All right, well, just mention the proclamation of Home Health Aid Appreciation Month in Tompkins County for the month of November 2018. And then I would like to, the next proclamation is recognizing a very important group of people, veterans of the armed services for the United States. And this is a really special Veterans Day. I mean, this is 100 years from the original Armistice Day, which we now call Veterans Day. The end of what was the Great War. It was thought that it was going to be the only war, the only world war that we would ever have. Tragically, that didn't come true, but we have been able to recognize veterans since then, since 100 years ago. And tonight, I do have a proclamation. But first, and I won't make you stand up for the whole time I read this, but would anybody here who's a veteran or a current is currently serving in the armed services, would you please stand up so we can thank you for your service? Thank you so very much. Whereas with respect for and in recognition of the contributions of our military service members have made, the contributions our military service members have made to the cause of peace and freedom around the world, and in order that a grateful nation might pay appropriate homage to the veterans of all its wars who have contributed so much to the preservation of this nation, the Congress of the United States has provided that November 11th of each year shall be set aside as a legal public holiday to honor our nation's veterans. And whereas Veterans Day provides an opportunity to remember, honor, and recognize the courage, valor, and dedication of those who've served our country, as well as those who continue to serve, and to thank them for defending our rights and protecting the freedom of our country. And whereas Tompkins County especially recognizes that its vast workforce is comprised of many veterans, as well as active and reserve military service members representing every branch of the United States Armed Forces. And we wish to convey our deepest gratitude and pay tribute to all of these individuals by communicating our sincere appreciation for their extraordinary contributions through this action and other recognition efforts. And whereas on this Veterans Day, we also remember and recognize the service and sacrifice of Tompkins County residents 100 years ago to support the United States in 1917 to 18, when this country entered the conflict in Europe, then, known then as the Great War, and today remembered as the First World War, when many entered this country's service, filling the country's quotas, the county's quota of men required in both 1917 and 1918. A number of women participated in the conflict, serving as nurses and supporting the war effort at home. And Tompkins County's total population also participated by adhering to food rationing, observing meatless and wheatless days so that there would be food for our troops. And whereas men from Tompkins County served in the American Expeditionary Forces, fighting in major battles, especially at Chateau Thierry, on the Somme Offensive and in the Argonne Forest, breaking the Hindenburg Line to end the conflict, with 43 of those from Tompkins County not returning, and many others wounded. And whereas on November 11, 2018, we also marked the centennial of the end of the First World War, the first Armistice Day, when bells rang throughout the county and those who had served in Europe began to return home. And whereas as a special commemoration of all those who served, there will be a reading of excerpts from their letters home on November 12th at the Tompkins County Public Library, that we today remember the exertions of county residents to make the world safe. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby call upon all of our residents to recognize the valor and sacrifice of our veterans and join me in honoring and thanking all veterans and military service members through the observance of Veterans Day on November 11th, 2018. And I'd like to present this to Jason as a veteran and representing all of our county employees and all residents of the county. Thank you, Jason.
Across the country, we thank you for the recognition.
Thank you. And I want to thank Carol Kamen for helping us to craft that. Is that right, Kathy?
Yes.
Carol Kamen, our county historian.
And Marsha Lynch.
And Marsha Lynch, thank you so very much for working on that proclamation. Appreciate it. I do want to ask for an executive session at the end of tonight's meeting to talk about real estate negotiations as well as labor negotiations. And we may reorder business a little bit so that staff can... We can accommodate our staff. But first, we have privilege of the floor for the public. I have
just one
form filled out. If anybody else would like to fill out a form, they're in the back of the room. So just the rules for speaking under privilege of the floor. I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. And I have Robert Barthold. My apologies for your name, but go ahead and if you would tell us your name and go to the microphone, sir. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Robert Barthoff of 1007 Teganic Boulevard, and I'm a resident of the town of Ithaca for 89 years, and I pay my taxes. Joe Petricola has a house on 127 Hornbrook Road in the town of Danby. On December 31st, 2014 to January 2nd, 2015, Sheriff Lansing of Tompkins County recklessly destroyed this house beyond repair. And I believe that Sheriff Lansing used the house at 127 Hornbrook Road as a training exercise for all police agencies in this action. I therefore feel that we should be compensated for this reckless destruction beyond repair at this house at 127 Hornbrook Road and down in Danby. I would like to ask the question to all members of the board, if he had this situation when the police entered your house and recklessly destroyed your house beyond repair, I'm sure you would want compensation for those actions. Just think about that for a moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Would anybody else like to address the legislature? All right, thank you. Municipal official, I'm looking for anybody. We usually have partners from the city here. Anybody hiding back there?
No. George McGonigal apologized. He had planned to come but has a conflicting meeting tonight.
I believe the city is having a meeting about the old library at this point, so they're probably there. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for letting us know. All right, legislators, privilege of the floor. Debra.
I just wanted to take this opportunity to congratulate Green Star, our star co-op, on their groundbreaking this morning. And I wish them nothing but success because I, too, am an owner. So congratulations, Green Star.
Thank you, Debra. None of us were there. It was a good event. It's a great project. Rich and then Amanda.
I had occasion to run into the Cornell University Council today, and I told her that I was going to say something good about Cornell, and she was shocked. But there it is. I am very happy to say that there's a monument that had fallen over at Cornell and ended up in storage for a long period of time, and the problem was that the base had subsided until it tipped over and went down a hill, and they just were going to store it. And I talked to them a while ago, and they said, yes, we're going to get to it, and they did. And this is a monument to somebody named Clifton Beckwith Brown, who was an Ithacan and attended Cornell University. And when the Spanish-American War broke out, he volunteered and went down and participated in the Battle of San Juan Hill and was the first Cornell student to die in combat in our local history, and certainly also in Ithacan. And the monument commemorates his memory, but it also is something where Teddy Roosevelt came to Cornell and planted two trees, and there are two Norway spruce trees next to the DKE fraternity that go along with the plaque, and the plaque talks about them. And it's really a very nice memorial to this student and to a veteran. And they did a very good job putting it back in place. So I wanted to say good things. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Amanda, then Mike Sigler.
I would like to say thank you to our Board of Elections. We had a very robust turnout, I understand. So thank you to our commissioners and our poll workers and all the people who volunteered their time. It wouldn't happen without all of that. So, and that's a crucial part of our democracy. So thank you to them. The second thing I wanted to say is a public service announcement. Please check yourself for ticks. They are everywhere. I am on my second round of antibiotics for Lyme disease, and I see them everywhere. They'll get on your dogs and cats. Please check yourselves. Please check your kids. With our warming winters and less snow, and they're everywhere. So please do pay attention to that.
Thanks, Amanda. Good advice. Mike Siglin and Anna.
I wanted to congratulate Green Star as well for this new building. I mean, it's great to see this kind of investment. I really do think it's going to be an anchor store on the waterfront. And I just, you know, I think it's great what can be done when you have such a nice, plentiful supply of natural gas to heat the shoppers in this brand new store that's going in. Cheap and affordable natural gas, really making that project possible. So thank you very much, Green Star.
I think we can modify that a little bit with the fact that they are working with Andrea Aguirre in our Business Yes program and working to try to at least heat part of the store with heat pumps and improve the building envelope and renewable sources of energy.
We'll take that deal in Lansing.
Okay. Anna.
Two things. I wanted to thank the organizers of the Veterans Day Parade this past Sunday. And Marsha for helping us, Marsha Lynch for helping us organize it, as well as our fearless leader, Jason Molino, for helping out as well and leading the fray. It was a great turnout by the county, and I want to encourage everybody to attend in coming years, because the people who are marching are the people who serve in our armed forces to this day. and to have the community come out and support them is a way that we can say thank you. So when the announcement does come out next year, I'm urging everyone to line the streets and say our thanks for everyone. The other thing that I did want to point out, something that I've been investigating, we have been talking about, as Martha pointed out, there is a meeting happening in the city about the library. And I did some digging for anyone who doesn't know about the library. It was very helpful for me. I had a long conversation with our director of facilities management department.
The old library.
The old library that is, sorry, thank you very much, that is very close to this building. There was a substantial abatement that was done in the late 1980s and another substantial abatement that was done in the early 90s. And those abatements removed all of the asbestos on the walls and the ceiling. There were some points where asbestos remained, which were in the large columns. People remember the inside. Some of the joints that they couldn't necessarily reach where beams met some of the columns. And the underside of the first floor overhang. So there's some small points, but a majority of the asbestos was removed. So it puts it in context for me. And I think it was very helpful for some of the community members that I was able to reach with that information. So everyone here, if people do contact you to help them understand what has been done in the past, I think puts everything in context. So I thought I would just share that those updates and a little historical perspective.
Anna, were you able to find out more about the roof, any recent roof repairs?
There were no, when the building was sold, so maintenance was done by the county up until the point that the building was sold. The building was used for both storage and the community outreach center, which had our day reporting. So AREL has records of all of the maintenance that was done in the building to maintain it for those two purposes up until the point of sale. The roof is a rubber roof, and so there was one point of leak in the roof, but it was structurally sound at the point of sale except for that one leak.
Okay. Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Ann Corman, then Leslin, and then Mike Lane.
Thanks, Martha. I want to note and acknowledge that since we met last time, the legislature, there's been two mass shootings in the United States, and there were 11 people killed at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, and last night 13 people were killed at a college bar in L.A. in Los Angeles, and I was wondering if we could just have a moment of silence.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ann. Very important. Did you want to say anything else?
There's a lot of different things that I'm thinking, but just one thing is that it's becoming so common that it doesn't really come up in the news feed. People aren't really talking about it. I mean, nobody has really, I mean, you mentioned something, you know, with the first shooting, but nobody has even, that I've run into today and I've been out in public, nobody's even talking about these things, and we're kind of getting used to it, and I don't like that, and that bothers me. So I think we need to talk more about it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Leslin, then Mike Sigler.
Thank you.
Mike Lane. Sorry.
I, too, want to join the sentiments honoring and thanking our veterans. I do want to express thank you on behalf of my husband, J.R. Clearborn, who could not be here because he's working at Loaves and Fishes at this point, feeding many folks, many of whom are veterans, who wanted to come and say thank you to the legislature for the proclamation. It does mean a lot to us in our household. And for those who could not make the parade, the honoring ceremonies are not over, because on Sunday there will be the ceremonies at DeWitt Park. And so we do encourage you to attend. I want to say a big shout out and thank you to Beverly Baker, my dear friend, and others who have been organizing for bells and chimes to ring out at 11 a.m. And so many of our religious institutions have agreed to let their bells ring, let their chimes sound, and I think led off by Cornell University. Similar to what you read in the proclamation, that 100-year celebration when the bells rang, to have a that happen again. So thank you, Beverly. She called me earlier today trying to get in touch with other pastors to make sure that this happens and happens well and people understand the significance of why it is happening. I'm not vain, and also big thanks to my brother, my uncle, who was a Vietnam vet, Purple Heart, and my brother, Army, who was Gulf War. In that vein, I also want to mention that there is a local woman who's been working with our county historian and others to produce a documentary called Civil Warriors. A lot of it is based on the Civil War until today, and honoring our veterans. And I know there's a big focus on veterans of color from Tompkins County, especially young black males and their fathers and whomever else who served. I encourage all of you, if you've never taken a walk, to the St. James AME Zion Church on Cleveland Avenue. Right outside of that church is a memorial that honors the 126 United States colored troops who were from Tompkins County. 26 names are on there that we know of. Some of them, many of them from Dryden. And their stories will be highlighted in this documentary. So stay tuned for that. Moving on, November 16th, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a little hoarse and I don't want it to take over. November 16th, I invite all of you and all of you watching us to the annual GIEC Harvest Fest. We're coming up in that Harvest Fest Thanksgiving time. November 16th, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. It is free and open to the public, turkey and all the trimmings. It's a very good time to just come, share a meal with someone you don't know, fellowship, you don't have to pay any money, and get to know someone else in the community. So please, all are invited. Again, Friday, November 16th, next Friday, oh dear, from 6 to 7:30 in the gym of the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. And if anyone wants to show up and volunteer, we take that as well. You can come serve some mashed potatoes or come and cook it during the day. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Mike Lane.
Well, I guess I'm going to continue with a somber tone about the Veterans Day. And I will mention that Dryden also has an event at 11 o'clock on Sunday. We can't be in both places, but we can be thinking about the same things. When I was in school, we studied history about things a long time ago called the 30 Years' War or the 100 Years' War. And as young people, we just shook our heads and said, well, how can people go to war for 30 years or 100 years, the French and English and whoever? Let me piece that together with something that I saw in the news that affected me. We know there are tens, if not hundreds of thousands of municipal officials across the country. They're like us county officials or state officials. They are village and city officials in their various offices. The article I read was about one from Utah who had been killed in Afghanistan. He was a member of the National Guard. He was a mayor of a small village. And having been a mayor of a small village, I guess it affected me to think he left seven children and a wife. He'd been over there to train Afghan soldiers, as I said. And at the same time, we read about Americans and others being killed by Afghan soldiers who were really pretended to be Afghan soldiers supporting the efforts that we had over there and but really were part of the Taliban or others that were committing murder. We've been there 17 years, since right after 2001. I don't think there's many of us who didn't think, yes, we needed to go over there and stop the murder that happened at the World Trade Centers so that that didn't happen again. Are we really going to be able to change the religion and culture over there? Alexander the Great couldn't. Certainly the English couldn't. The Russians tried it. They couldn't do it. And I don't think we're going to be able to do it. It seems we've spent a lot of treasure trying to get people to think the way we do, and they may or may not. We have to defend ourselves, and there's always the argument that we need to be there in order to keep it from being over here. Well, that's why we were in Vietnam for, what, 8 or 9 years. And in the end, we had to leave unceremoniously. So I'm just saying that I think we need to think about people that have died in Afghanistan and other places. I think there's over 2,700 soldiers have died in Afghanistan. 20,000 have been wounded over these years. Where are we going? Isn't it time to stop? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Anyone else? All right, I'm going to do a little reordering. I'm going to give a very brief report, go to Jason's report, and then if I can read the consent agenda topics, I think some staff will be able to go home, and then we'll go to Mike Hall in the airport, if that sounds okay. I just wanted to mention another piece from the election that five Cornell alumni were elected to Congress. One, Catherine Clark in Massachusetts, a re-election, but that one of the new members is Charisse Davids, you may have heard of, in Kansas. She is the first Native American woman who will be elected to Congress, who was elected, I think there were two elected on Tuesday, and she's also the first openly gay member to be elected from Kansas. So that is something, among other things, to be proud of. And the five Cornell grads include Republicans and Democrats and from various states across the country. So, yeah, we have kind of an outsized influence, it seems, in some ways. So, Jason, I'll go to your report.
Thank you. Several things to report. First, I'm happy to conclude that I let you know that we have finished the search for the director of the Office of Aging. I want to go over the process real quickly just to explain it again. We had a good applicant pool. From that pool, we had a selection committee. The selection committee included three legislators, Amanda, Glenn and Shauna participated along with three community stakeholders, agencies that work closely with the Office for Aging. Also had three department heads join me for that interview as well. They all ranked candidates. We then took the top 10 ranking of those candidates, had quick phone interviews to bring down to a short list. That short list included four personal interviews. Those four candidates were interviewed by the interview panel. They also then had meet and greets with the COFA staff. COFA staff gave input and feedback on each of those candidates, as did the interview panel. And following that, we took all that feedback in and came out of it with a top candidate to recommend to you for appointment. before and to request that you confirm the appointment before doing so. Would offer, if you'd like to go into executive session, I'd be happy to give you more more information on that individual candidate.
Is anybody interested in going to executive session? Go ahead, Jason.
If that's okay, then I'd like to recommend your confirmation of the appointment of Lisa Monroe. Lisa is currently the acting interim director for the Office for Aging. She has over 20 years' experience in working with the aging population. She has worked for us since 2013. I will say that throughout this process, we had a great candidate pool, but what was most, I think, convincing was that the agency partners that we work with so closely and depend heavily on had nothing but the utmost of respect for Lisa throughout this process and had nothing but compliments. Obviously, you know, filling the shoes of a large ego like Lisa Holmes, those are hard shoes to fill. But Lisa Monroe has been a steadfast leader in the department, and I would request your confirmation of her appointment.
Thank you, Jason. For anybody listening out there, that was a joke about Lisa Holmes. So thank you very much. And welcome, Lisa. Rich, you want to?
I'd move.
Rich moves that appointment, seconded by Glenn Morey. Any discussion? All right. And again, thank you to the folks who helped in the interview process. Very important to have legislators at the table as part of that team. And thank you, Jason, for conducting that. All in favor of the appointment of Lisa Monroe for Office for the Aging Director? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Welcome, Lisa. Would you come on up? Come on up and say a few words.
Lisa's here with her two daughters, too, McKenna and Marlia.
Hi, thank you. Lisa Holmes was actually texting me at the same time you were saying that, Jason, so that was pretty funny. So I'm really happy and excited to take on this new role. We have a great team at the office, and, you know, I'm really just looking forward to doing great things with them and working with you all, so... And if I could say something about the proclamation for the Home Health Aid. Mm-hmm. So today, being part of the Home Health Aid event committee, the recognition event is actually happening right now. So that's why nobody was here to do it. It's at Green Star. And there's about 50 aides that are attending. So it was a really good turnout. So I will pass that on to them.
Wait, why don't you?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right. And you had a couple of other items?
I do. I have two more things, if that's all right. Unfortunately, one employee couldn't be here today, but I wanted to just read a little bit. One of our employees was honored by Rotary, Paul Cowles out of Recycled Materials and Management. The Ithaca Rotary Club recently honored four individuals in our community with a Pride Workmanship Award. This annual recognition pays tribute to employees whose outstanding work performance in their organization is above and beyond the call of duty and is instrumental in its achievement of the organization's performance goals. This year, 28-year Tompkins County employee Paul Cowles was among those recognized with the Pride of Workmanship Award at the Rotary Club's October 24th luncheon meeting. Paul is the county solid waste enforcement officer at the Department of Recycling Materials and Management. And while that may have been his official job title, his duties and responsibilities go far beyond that. In addition to investigating reports of illegal dumping and imposing civil penalties, he enforces the trash tag, mandatory recycling, and hauler licensing laws. So he makes a lot of friends and otherwise. Yeah, I think he's tagged me a few times. Paul also monitors and maintains a formerly Hillview Road and Caswell Road landfill sites. He also oversees operations of the Household Hazardous Waste Collection Program. Paul has engaged in employee safety for many years and wrote the department's workplace violence protection plan. He was used as a model by other departments. An outstanding public servant, Paul comes to work every day, each and every day, with Tompkins County and its residents' interests at heart. Congratulations, Paul, on his well-deserved honor. Unfortunately, Paul has fallen ill today, is sick, but Barb Ekstrom is here, his department head. And just want to thank you, Barb. Paul's a gem, and we really appreciate all his efforts. I'm sorry he couldn't be here today. Thank you for your leadership. Last but not least, had the privilege of going to the naturalization ceremony this week. I just want to compliment the county clerk's office for doing yet another fabulous job. What a great opportunity. If no one has gone to one, I would encourage you to go. It's a great opportunity to see. I think there were 30 individuals from 22 countries that gained their citizenship. Also, just happened to be the assistant coach for Cornell men's team. We wanted to give him a little extra test just to make sure, but he did fine. But it was a great opportunity, and again, I encourage anybody to participate if they can. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Jason. Any questions for Jason? All right, we'll come back to County Attorney and Finance Director. Let me go through the consent agenda first. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. So just holler if you'd like something pulled off. First, I have an Ethics Advisory Board appointment, Gretchen Remarchik. And Resolution A, authorization to execute supplemental funding agreement for construction with New York State Department of Transportation, Coddington Road, Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road and East King Road intersections, Town of Ithaca. That's ID 8180. Resolution B, increasing membership to the Air Service Board from 8 to 10, Ithaca and Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8177. Resolution C, authorizing supplemental agreement numbers 12 and 13 with CNS companies for design services, passenger terminal building expansion and security improvements, and construction phase services, passenger terminal building expansion and security improvements, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8174. Resolution D, authorizing supplemental agreement number 17 with CNS companies for state pollutant discharge elimination system permit, SPDES permit application, environmental design and permitting services, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8175. Resolution E, authorization to execute a five-year agreement with the Unified Court System for the provision of cleaning and maintenance services at the main courthouse, ID 8172. And Dave, Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure, Resolution F should be under your report. That's a fee item. We need to do that in a full, not on the consent agenda. Resolution G, date of 2019 organizational meeting, ID 8154. For anybody who's checking, that's January 3rd. Resolution H, Budget Adjustment Youth Services Department and County Administration, ID 8108. Resolution I, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number blank of 2018, amending the county charter, section 4.01B, to remove the requirement that the local advisory boards of assessment review shall meet each year, ID 8060. Resolution J, setting the income limits for persons with disabilities and limited incomes, and persons 65 years of age or older with limited incomes, real property tax exemptions, ID 8040. Resolution K, designation of newspaper, ID 8158. Resolution L, correction of errors, ID 8157. Resolution M, authorization for budget transfer of funds from New York State Energy and Resource Development Authority, NYSERDA, Clean Energy Community Grant to support Tompkins County Government acquisition of electric vehicles and association electric vehicle charging stations, ID 8183. Resolution N, award of fall 2018 new tourism initiative grants, ID 8181. Resolution O, order of fall 2018 community celebrations grants, ID 8182. Resolution P, affirmatively furthering fair housing in Tompkins County, ID 8165. And Resolution Q, authorizing submittal of 2018 New York State Homes and Community Renewal Housing Trust Fund Corporation Community Development Block Grant Program Application, ID 8206. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Glenn. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Do we have a prize for the longest titles? Is that what we're going for here? All right. Thank you all very much. Mike Hall, Airport General Manager. Welcome. And come on up. Do we want to do the screens? We have a PowerPoint? Okay.
Thank you. kind of an impressive sounding lead-in. As the project as the airport has developed over the last number of months.
Mike, hold on one sec.
Too loud? Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
There we go. Okay. As our project has developed over the past few months, I said that I would come back on a recurring basis to bring you up to speed about where we are in the project. As we sit here this evening, I had a chance to go through both our committees, Transportation, F&I, and I think Amanda and Rich are probably the only two that haven't gotten this briefing. And I just offer to you, if you'd like to meet as a sidebar, I'll be happy to get together with you whenever you like.
Thank you. And yes.
So we are Ithaca-Tompkins, soon-to-be International Airport. Just as a reminder, we are the strongest economy in upstate New York. We're growing a couple percent a year. We're the center of a seven-county area that really functions regionally, particularly as Cougar Medical Center has acquired the Schuyler Hospital and the many other connections between our communities. What we're going to talk about this evening is part of sustaining that bright spot of economy. And that boils down to air service. And if you can think of one thing with air service, Cornell University is the only top 20 university that's not in an urban area. And if they want to be a top 10, which they do, and if they're the heart of our economy, the first order of rationalization for this involves supporting Global Cornell. In order to do that, we need to be uniquely internationally welcoming. Remember that Tompkins and Queens are the two most diverse counties in New York State, and where you have diversity, you need inclusion. And it's very important in our community that we include all of our citizens, residents, inhabitants, and visitors with the values of fairness, dignity, and respect. And if you see situations that don't meet those values, you need to break the silence, because we will have the county community that we make. And there certainly are plenty of pressures in the world these days to split apart rather than being inclusive. So when you come here, I want you to know that you speak your language, we cook your food, we support the Cougar Chamber Orchestra, and you're welcome. 2 years ago, when we wrote the grant proposal, it was kind of a $24 million project in three phases. In the last 2.5 years, a lot has changed in terms of inflation, and cost of materials has gone up, and there's always inevitably design creep. One thing I would say that I'm very pleased with is that we signed a project labor agreement with union labor. So the uncertainty, the quality of labor, the cost of labor is all off the table. That was one of the variables that we could deal with, and we did. So I can assure you that in terms of the fairness of our wages on this project, or however you want to look at it, we're at union standard, and that takes a big load off of me. As the project has evolved to today, you know, it could be as much as maybe $28 million, but I'm going to point out that the first phase, which remained at 8.3, came in at 7.6, and we're certainly hopeful that a sharp pencil and good negotiating and clear design will allow each of these other phases to come in similarly under target. But, of course, we have to plan for the most challenging situation. Look, if it could be as much as $28 million, I decided the best way to look at this was to have a capital campaign. Why not 30? That way we got it covered. So here's where we stand right now. We're coming out of the silent phase into the public phase of the capital campaign, and there are two big items left for us to pay attention to, most particularly the federal funding. We have submitted for round two funding under the Supplemental Airport Improvement Program, a number of projects that we worked closely with the FAA and have developed the rationale and the supportability of those projects. They're all part of a $11.3 million ask under round two of the Supplemental Airport Improvement Program. That's capped at $10 million, we think. So we're looking for 10. We're working hard with our federal partners to get that money, And if we do, we certainly will declare the capital campaign a success. In addition, there's some significant stakeholders beyond the usual list of subjects that need to participate in this project. And one of them is New York State Electric and Gas. You know, we're taking the terminal essentially off gas, freeing up 70 homes and 7 businesses. And in my opinion, they need to invest in this forward-looking project. So we're going to continue to work with them. You know, this started off as something called the no-pipe alternative. That's sort of a chimera at this point, but we need to continue to encourage partnership from the public sector utilities to help with the project. So what's the bottom line? We're trying to raise 30. We think it'll cost less than 28. And I'll be back because it changes on a daily basis. But we'll bring you up to speed as we get new information. Milestones. As I said, the good news is we broke ground on we actually started construction on the 1st of November. And phase one is well underway. A lot of supporting activity, including we're updating the website and doing all sorts of things to communicate what's going on up there. And I'll share more with you at our next meeting about that. One of the things we've done is brought a documentation company on board, and they're going to take pictures of during construction, and they're also going to provide us at the end with an as-built architectural drawing that is linked spatially to digital imagery of everything. So if you walk into the utility closet and you say, I wonder what's behind that wall, you can mouse over and it'll bring up a picture of the pipes and wires that are behind the wall. That's part of our effort to control maintenance costs in the out years, because we'll have a really good technical reference of what's there. Hey, you know, about a year from now, it's all going to be over. The governor's going to come in and cut a ribbon, and we'll be off and running. So where do we go from here? Well, first of all, in 2019, obviously, number one, we got to finish the project. We got to bring it in under estimate, fully funded, and we have to have a plan in place to operate the new facility and the new paradigm going forward. So my commitment to you is that as we begin to develop the 2020 budget, which is, I think, right after tonight's vote, right, we are going to look at ourselves as if we were a private sector business. And we want to create a bankable business plan. Now, a bankable business plan is one that is solid enough in its assumptions and has sufficient cash reserves that the bank thinks it's going to survive to pay the loan off, right? And so what I want to be able to do following that paradigm of thinking is come back to you and say, here's our business plan, here's the amount of cash reserve we need, so that even if we have a bad year, an airline goes bankrupt, remember when that happened a decade ago? Think it's going to happen again one of these days? We don't want to have to come back to the legislature and say we got to have a bailout. Both Binghamton and Elmira get $1 million of general fund money a year because of their business plan, and we need to fix that here. So we're going to work hard, and that's one of the reasons I want to raise 30 and spend less than 28, is so that maybe that can be the start of that rainy day fund that says to you, you know, keep managing us, keep approving our budget, keep helping us develop and grow in the right way, but understand that we're relatively insular from having to come back and ask you for money, so you can worry about general fund money in other places. Part of that is partnerships for economic development. You know, we've been a typical airport forever, and I've got some space. I'll sell you an ad, right, and that gives me a little bit of airport income. We're going to get away from that starting right now. First of all, we're going to do our marketing with tight connection to two public-private partnerships, Tompkins County Area Development and Tompkins County Chamber of Commerce. And our purpose here when we're dealing with TCAD is to identify those customers and markets in which we should be a presence to help attract and retain business investment and interest to the community. So it's targeted marketing. And as far as the chamber is concerned, it's the Convention and Visitors Bureau and what have you. You know, who out there do we need to reach to? Let me give you an example of this. I know the owners of Greek Peak pretty well, and you know, it's 25 minutes from the airport. You can do it in 20. And so with the Washington service, I went out and met with them, and I said, look, a lot of people in Washington want to ski, and they got to drive a couple hours to get to a ski area. Why don't they just go to Dulles and fly up here, get an Uber or rent a car, or maybe we could get a bus to run up there, and they could ski. You get a breakfast in Washington and be skiing before noon at Greek Peak. Yeah, that's a pretty cool idea. And they listened to me, and they said, yeah, you know, I like that idea. So my proposition was, why don't you spend your advertising dollars in Washington, and we'll give you space in the terminal as long as you draw people. You know, we got to have some rigor here, but as long as you're actually bringing people into the community. Besides which, you only got 150 beds. So if 200 people come, 50 people got to stay someplace else. Why don't they stay downtown in Ithaca, you know, or whatever? And they said, well, we really like that, but we're going to go you one better. We're going to advertise in Tel Aviv. Turns out Greek Peak has the only kosher kitchen around a resort in upstate New York. Now, that's a draw. And they'll go Tel Aviv, Washington, Ithaca, Greek Peak. And if there's overflow, they'll come to Ithaca, where we speak your language, we cook your food, we celebrate your music, and you're welcome. That's the kind of marketing we're going to start engaging in with the help of those organizations, of which, of course, the county is deeply invested in each of them. Then there's the next issue, which is that the airline aircraft are getting bigger. They figured out that you make money with big airplanes and long distances. So for a boutique market like ours, it means that the airlines are going to take us to a hub. We're not going to get point-to-point service from Delta Airlines from Ithaca to something other than a hub. And those hubs are likely to be Detroit, Washington, and Charlotte. Starting to walk away from the East Coast because the East Coast airports are constrained. They got weather problems. When the weather goes down, they can only land 60% of the scheduled flights. The first flights to be canceled are sitting on the ground in upstate New York, whether it's Ithaca or Syracuse. So then you can't rely on the travel. And so what was the point in the first place? Behind this bubble, remember that if the smallest airliner today is 50 seats, by the way, a year ago it was 37, the smallest airliner 2 years from now is going to be 65 seats, and then it's going to be 90 seats. If we go from 50 to 90, that's a 40% increase in the number of passengers at the same frequency of flights, and that's really what our goal is. We need the frequency. We're going to get growth through the gauge of the airplane. But if we're not flying a 50-seat airplane direct to Boston, we're not going to be flying a 90-seat airplane direct to Boston. So we are starting to investigate supplemental air service, and without putting organizational names on this, in principle, think the Cornell bus. Don't think Cornell, but in principle, think the Cornell bus with a plane substituted for the bus. Easy. I got that. And so we've retained four students from the Johnson School through Big Red Consulting to make a business plan. And when the business plan is done, we'll share it with you. We'll share it with potential operator investors, including Cornell. And, you know, off the top of my head, it could be day of week rather than three times a day, 5 days a week or 7 days a week. Maybe we go to New York Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Maybe we go to Boston Tuesday, Thursday. Maybe we go to Toronto on Wednesday. I don't know. That's what the marketing part of the business plan is all about. But the bottom line is we can do this. And if we have 20 or less passengers, remember the old Beech 1900 turboprop? Yeah, not a great ride, but hey, for an hour or less in the seat, it's not bad. If we have 20 or less passengers, we can clear through our customs. But we don't have to clear through TSA. So now Anna can leave her house at 6:30, get to the airport at 6:45, doesn't have to go through TSA, gets on the airplane, leaves at 7. She's in Manhattan by 8:45. She's got a 9 o'clock meeting. She's got a full 8-hour day. She's done at 5 p.m. She's back at her house at 7 p.m. That's the kind of thing we're looking at. And just for the economics, so you understand this isn't crazy, the bus is a couple hundred bucks round trip. a hotel room or a in New York is $350. A 19-seat airplane can do a day-round trip for less than $600 a person. So the numbers work if your time is valuable. What's that?
Sign me up, Mike.
Yeah, well, we're going to consult with you because we need your input in this, and we'll find a, you know, part of the process is going to be, hey, what do you think? But this is doable, and this is something we control. And then remember, the Cornell doesn't own the buses. They just hired a bus company to paint their buses and run them. So whoever gets behind this business plan, if it flies, would reach out to somebody like local Taganic Aviation could do this. And so all the pieces get assembled, and all of a sudden we have some control over a more granular market that's not big enough to attract scheduled air service. That's on the radar for 2019. And actually, we have some potential investors that want to see this happen in 2019. Well, parts and pieces are there. We just need some assembly. The solar-powered future, really, really important to us. You know, the terminal becomes a model home. The neighborhood could become a microgrid. And thanks to a connection that Martha made with Rocky Mountain Institute, we're going to have an awareness meeting in February with a few people, and you'll have an opportunity to think, you know, say who ought to be there, just to kick around what the future might hold if we created a neighborhood grid around the airport and its, you know, its general locale. A lot of potential there, and very important step to consider if we are really going to meet the county's sustainable energy goals for 2040, 2050 type time frame. That's not going to happen if we start in 2038. So the first step is faltering. It's not perfect, but it needs to take place soon in order to pave, you know, set the direction for where we want to go long term. And that's all up to you. We're going to build the solar-powered airport of the future, and I could go on for the rest of the evening about all the angles that we could play around this that are exciting to people who want to have a community lead by example. We're excited internally, but we could become a great role model for the state of New York or for our country or even for the world if we get this right, because thanks to the evolution of vision and plans in this county over the last several decades, all the parts and pieces are there. We just, although some assembly are required, and we could be really out in front of everybody. That's what it looks like, except that the canopy is clear. I'm sorry, Mike. But the good thing about the canopy is that the new canopy, which was part of the renderings, additions to the project, which pushed the price up, the new canopy is out over the driving lane, and it's translucent. So you'll be able to get out of your car without having to grab an umbrella. That's nice. And it looks pretty good. Four jet bridges, very nice, very nice layout to support the future. And down in the lower left corner, you see the control tower. We'll get around to moving that at some point. So if we ever needed to expand again, which we won't for several decades, we could push another departure out there. So we're not landlocked at our current site. Subject to any of your questions, and certainly an individual follow-up. Any of you are welcome. I'll come and we can talk at whatever granularity you want about all this.
Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate the information, and especially the energy working on this project and everything that's connected to it. Any questions for Mike? Anna?
Just one short one. When is the announcement for the federal grant?
We are told that the Round 2 Supplemental Airport Improvement Program money will be announced in January. Now, the official date's the 1st of January. Don't hold your breath on that one. But the decisions are to be made between Thanksgiving and the winter holidays, and then the announcement, you know, thereafter.
And one quick follow-up, actually. Phase 1, you said, is on its way. Can you briefly describe what is happening in Phase 1?
Phase 1 is the cheeks. We are in construction, pushing out the terminal in both directions from where you enter So as you walk into the terminal, we're building a baggage area behind the wall so that the screening machine can go behind the wall on the right. And on the left, we're making more room so you can pass without having to push your way through lines of passengers, the cheeks. Phase two, you stick your tongue out. That's the arrival and departure concourse and a widened security and a commitment to have a pre-cleared lane. And phase three is the customs building, roughly.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Mike, and keep up the great work.
One last thing in closing with Veterans Day, strong advocacy from the legislature, we will find a home for veterans in the new terminal. And that's directly from Leslin. Thank you, Leslin.
Very good. Terrific. Thank you. All right. We will go. You want to raise the screens again? Thanks, Kathy. Let's do the two other reports, and then I think, let me just ask, Katie and Jay, are you waiting for the rollover resolutions or the whole budget? For all of it?
Jay's for the long haul.
Jay's for the long haul. Okay. And Katie? For T. Okay. So we'll go, let's do Jonathan and Rick, and then we'll go to T. And then I think we should go to the budget resolution. We have a lot of members of the public, some members of the public waiting for that. All right, Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
Okay, just very shortly to add to Mike's report, the move of the DOT facility to the airport is also moving forward. The governor has said it's a priority, and we expect it to move forward as quickly as possible. That's it.
Fantastic. Any questions for Jonathan? All right, great. Rick Snyder, finance director.
Wasn't part of my report, but Mike made me think of it. We got notified from our bond attorney last week that there is yet one more set of resolutions that has to come before you before the end of the year through the Transportation Committee and the legislature, which is an IRS provision that stipulates yet another bond resolution authorizing the bonding for the airport expansion. So you'll see that again at a Transportation Committee meeting, and that also involves a public hearing. It also involves a final bond resolution. All that needs to happen between now and the end of the year. So we're putting all those, Kathy and I have spent a little bit of time putting all those dates together and getting all those documents assembled. The only thing I have to offer as a report tonight is in your red folder, sales tax. Yay, we haven't seen this for a while. We have good news. If you turn to the three schedules that are in your folder tonight, the first one is just for the month of September, so look at the top of the page for September, and you will see that our September sales tax has gone up 7.05% for the month of September. At the end of September, the year-to-date distributions for the county's portion totaled $27,699,211 compared to $25,896,048 in 2017. This represents an increase of $1,800,000 year-over-year. That's $1.8 million year-over-year increase, or 6.96%. So we're basically at this point in the year at a 7% increase year-over-year. The second report, which looks very much like the first one, is done on a quarterly basis. In the left-hand columns, we're looking at third quarter tracking, and you can see that when you're comparing the county's portion from quarter to quarter, we're up 8.62%. And so I thought that's a pretty good indication that we're doing even better than the first two quarters for this year. Again, the year-to-date figures are exactly the same as the first report. What we've also added over the last few months is that budget comparison at the bottom of either of these two spreadsheets. And you can see that when we're looking at our gross sales tax, that is sales tax that's budgeted all throughout the budget, we're at 80.8%. Of course, three-quarters of the way of the year, we're roughly through 75% of the year. So anything over 75 is a pretty good figure. So 80.8% comparing to our budget. If you look at the unallocated sales tax revenue, which is that component that's most important to county administration, and that's the available funds that we use to support the whole general fund budget, that comes in at 79.7%. So that's roughly 80%, again, above that 75% benchmark. The last table is one that shows all the years. And if you turn to the second final page of this, you can see, once again, going to the third period, the numbers are just off the charts. It's our best quarter of all time, and it's also our best year so far for year-to-date. So you can see in looking at not only is the county share positive and growing, but it's the same kind of figures, the same excellent growth is marked there for the town and village share and also for the city share. And that's all I have to report tonight. I'll take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions? Well, this is great. We know you're not personally responsible for it, but we'll, you know, but congratulations anyway. All right. Thank you very much.
We blamed you when it was a bad year.
Yeah, that's right. We should do that. Absolutely. Kathy reminds me about Resolution F, and I would just ask Dave, you want to take that, and then we'll go to T, and then we'll go to the budget resolution.
Resolution FID 8171, establishing a unit charge for 2019 solid waste annual fee, Department of Recycling and Materials Management. And basically, that was a $58 charge of $3 from the previous year. And I would move that.
All right, seconded by Glenn. Is there a discussion? All ready to vote? All right, all in favor of Resolution F, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Excellent. All right. T, Anna Kellis, Chair of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality.
I have one resolution, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2017 and prior years to various accounts of departments that report to the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, ID 8099.
All right. Seconded by Deborah Dawson. Thank you. Discussion? Questions? All right, all in favor, please raise your hands. Don't raise your hands. It's a short roll call.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, Katie. All right, then let's go to Resolution U. Mike Lane, Chair of Budget, Capital, and Personnel.
Well, here it is. I'd like to move, I think I'm moving the revised version.
In your red folders.
In the red folders, which is the adoption of the 2019 Tompkins County budget and the 2019 to 2023 Tompkins County capital program. And I so move.
Goodbye. Dave McKenna. We got nothing to say, right? Okay. Discussion. Henry, let's start with Mike and then Henry Granison.
We always have lots to say, but we've talked the budget for a lot of months. We've had a lot of people working on it. We've ended in a place which I think is admirable, thanks to the hard work of our staff, certainly Jason, certainly Kevin, certainly all our department heads that have come together, and the staff, their staff, that helped us with the figures, the presentations we had, and the great participation by this legislature. I think this should be adopted. I think it should be. I think we should be very proud of it.
Mike, would you mind reading the numbers and the results, just so it's on the microphone?
Resolve further that the change will result in an approximate tax levy increase of 1.54%, falling below the Tompkins County adjusted tax cap of approximately 9.89%, as calculated according to New York State's formula, an approximate tax rate of $6.41 per thousand of assessed value, which amounts to a rate decrease of approximately 2.58%, and an increase of 3.52% in local spending. Resolve further that this tax change will result in an increase of approximately $14.63 on a medium-priced home in 2018 at $185,000.
Thank you very much, Mike. Henry Granison.
I would like to make a over-target request. Coming from county administration, to have a one-time addition of $25,000 to be given to the community outreach program, and it's going to come out the contingency fund.
All right, just so seconded by Dan.
Thank you.
So at this point, what you're suggesting is an amendment to the proposed budget. So an amendment to this motion. We don't use the language of OTR anymore. Okay, so you're proposing to amend the tentative budget that's now proposed, that's on the table. And you said, so $25,000 to the community outreach worker program through funded it, run by Family and Children's Services. You said from the contingent fund, you mean, I just want to clarify, you mean to put that money into the contingent fund? Is that your intention, that we increase the contingent fund by $25,000?
Yes.
With earmarked for that. Okay. All right, Dan, then.
Yeah.
Got it? Okay. All right. Anna, this first.
I just wanted to know the process. I'm interested in having some conditions on this, that discussions between the city and DIA and the county happen prior to this process happening. We've had this in pilot for 3 years. I think the program has proven itself. I think it's a strong program, but there are a lot of questions that I think we need to hammer out, like what is the extent of the need that it is that we have now? What are projections of needs that we see coming forward? What is the actual program that we want to see to meet that need, rather than simply basing it off of supporting the workers that are currently in the program? What is the scope that we're interested in? What are the outcomes that we're interested in? I think there's just a lot of questions, and I would like for all of the funders of this program to come up with a game plan for all of those before this money is released. And if that means also coming up with a formal MOU agreement that is updated so that we don't have to redo this every year, I'd like to see that. So I don't know the formal process, but I'd love to see those conditions added to the removing this from contingent.
I don't think all that goes in the motion. Right.
So that was a question of, I'm asking what would be the process of making sure that those things are met before it is removed out of contingent. So that is a question.
Sure.
To the table.
Jason, you want to comment on that?
Sure. I've expressed, some of you asked my opinion on how to proceed with this particular issue. I've expressed that, and I don't think my position on it has changed, and I'll just let you know, I did speak with Mike Ellis from the Children and Family Services today about this particular request. I don't want to speak on his behalf, but I think we agreed that what is, I think, envisioned is a positive thing, in that the program can grow and can expand from what it was originally conceived as several years ago. The questions of what is that shared vision, how do we get there, what are the outcomes to determine it, and then how do we fund it is still yet to be determined. Because this discussion has happened later in this process, I've suggested and I would probably continue to recommend that there not be any amendments to the budget, but yet we continue to have that dialogue with Children and Family Services, the city, because I think the city needs to be a leader in this discussion, as they were a leader in the conception of the program, as well as the other partners, such as the Downtown Alliance and Cuyahoga Medical Center. So I think, despite whether you put it in contingent fund with the condition that there's more to be figured out or whether you don't, I think the discussion into the framework has to be brought back to you to understand what is the expected outcome of this expansion of services and where are the parties as part of that vision in participating in it. Again, this being that late in the process, I think this is it's a good program as to what it's been able to achieve with its intended initial vision. What was being discussed yesterday at the public safety meeting is different, and I think we agree to that. Do we all have the same, all the stakeholders of the same place have that same consensus, and how do you want to get there, I think, is where we're at, and how do we articulate that, and then how do we fund that to get to that point? So other than getting the parties together in short order in the upcoming months, identifying what the expansion means, which I don't think we understand yet, and what are those outcomes, common outcomes that we want to achieve, which is yet to be determined, it's hard to understand what exactly you're going to fund and for how much.
So I have Deborah, and then I have a question, then I see Henry, and then Mike Lane.
I guess I just think that this is something that the committee is going to have to hammer out before it brings the final request to all of us. And certainly, I know several of us who aren't on the committee attended that meeting yesterday. That's probably the place where this stuff will all get taken care of. But I don't think the committee is going to handle it irresponsibly, certainly. And I think all of that stuff will be taken care of before they bring it to us, because I think Rich knows and Henry knows what our concerns are.
You mean Public Safety Committee?
Right. So I just wanted to backtrack for a minute. Did you say 20 or 25?
25.
Okay, thank you.
So that's sort of my question. Why 25, and what exactly is your intention that it be for, Henry?
25,000 would be, last night the city voted on their budget. They put in $25,000 for this position. The Downtown Ithaca Alliance has also guaranteed, I guess, $15,000. So we would match the city's amount. It would be used to fund a second position in the community outreach program. Because right now, there's only one person in the program who has a caseload of over 100 people. And we know that's too much. And so I'm just trying to right-size the program, at least trying to right-size the program to, in fact, have two people doing the job. And they may have caseloads of 50 people each, but it would relieve all the pressure from the single caseworker who's been working very, very hard and very diligently for some time. And so we know from the LEAD program that, again, the estimate is 25 people for a caseworker. We have four times of that right now.
Right, but my understanding is it's very, very different from LEAD.
It's not that different from LEAD in terms of.
Okay.
The person still has too many cases. And so it would be just to basically double the number of people doing the same exact thing that they're doing now.
Okay.
So that's what the funding would be for, and it would match the city's amount, which the city passed last night.
Okay, so this is the end of my thing, and then if you had something else that you're actually going to say, because you're answering my question. So, because we heard yesterday at Public Safety that there were a couple different issues, and one was kind of a current deficit, and it was, I think, around $28,000.
It was $72,000 total.
But in this current, we're not going to go backwards on previous year's deficits. You know, And in fact, the original MOU that was, thank you very much for sending by email all that information and previous resolutions, et cetera. And that one of those resolutions, I think the originating resolution actually said the Family and Children Services offered to cover the overhead. You know, that was in the original plan, that they were going to cover the overhead. And so what I heard yesterday was that that deficit of 28 a year is basically overhead. Now, we didn't see any kind of breakdown, but so you're saying this amount would not be to cover the deficit, right? It would be to hire a new person.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, Henry, that was what you said already was in response to me. So was there something else that you wanted to say?
I just wanted to say that, you know, essentially the city passed it without these restrictions. Downtown Ithaca Alliance submitted the money without these restrictions, and that Jason's analysis is that we can just put this off. And, you know, Mike Ellis is here, and we can bring him up, and he said that, you know, they don't know whether they can continue this program under the current funding. And so, you know, we risk losing a program or having the program cut back significantly without this funding. And the timing is what the timing is. The city was able to deal with it. Downtown Ithaca Alliance was able to deal with it. I hope that we'd be able to deal with it too, that we'd be able to at least give funding to people who are running a very good program, that we sort of see a need to do this.
Okay, I've got Mike Lane, Leslin, Rich, Shauna, and then Anna.
Clarifying question. We're talking about this being a target increase or a one-time increase? What are we talking about with this
amendment?
One-time
increase.
It's a one-time increase. So it would not affect any of our figures in our budget. Is that correct, Kevin, as far as the percentage changes? Kevin?
Correct. No target changes. No percentage.
You got to go to the mic.
Being loud isn't sufficient.
You're right in that it wouldn't affect the percentage changes. The thing that would move would be the expenditure budget number. Yeah, the spending.
And I do want to thank Henry for bringing this forward and Dan. I've been thinking a lot about this. I was the one that first proposed the money at the request of the Tompkins County Public Library for this because we needed some help. They needed some help, and not simply being a place where everybody just went to nurse their problems that they were experiencing both inside and outside the library back then. We heard the folks in the library come over and strongly support this program and an addition. But I know that this committee will look at this. Deborah, you're exactly right. They'll look at it thoroughly. And I hope if we pass this, they will also look at how do we approach the same issue in some of our villages? I'm thinking of Groton. I'm thinking of Dryden. I'm thinking of Trumansburg, where we have people with some of the same problems. We have police departments, smaller police departments, with some of the same issues that they have to deal with. So I think it's important that if we're going to do what seems to be a very good program and maybe helping us keep folks out of jail, which is a good thing, that we make sure that we don't have it targeted solely at the folks downtown. If we're going to have it be a larger program, then we need to think in a larger way. This is really, in my view, an ombudsman program, somebody who's interfacing with folks to help them maneuver through the difficulties of their lives, whether it's courts, treatments, housing problems, food problems, lots of things. So I'm going to support this and. Because we're putting it into contingency, and I have confidence in our committee.
All right, Leslin is next.
I would like a repeat of Henry's motion, because I'm hearing something a little different.
what I heard was $25,000 one-time money to be parked into the contingent fund for the community outreach worker program to hire, to contribute, matching the city share and then the balance from DIA to hire a second person, undesignated as to exactly what the job description is or the hours or the territory, et cetera, but a second person. Correct?
Correct.
Is that correct? So $25,000, not from contingent fund, but to be parked in contingency, and this $25,000 is coming from where?
Well, it's one-time money that comes out of the fund balance.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you. So I want to also echo Jason's sentiments. Henry, I hear you about, you know, the city and the DIA, you know, had no concerns, and that's because the city and the DIA have primarily benefited from this. And the, one of the reasons behind it, like Mike said, was some of the issues that were happening outside of the, our library, and so we got involved for that reason. And within the parameters of DIA, I know that Tammy has certainly gone above and beyond, you know, sort of that original geographic area in meeting people where they are, and that's much appreciated. But I really, really would like to see us have a full conversation about what are the measures, what are our expectations if we are going to become fully invested in this program. I really would like to see that happen, knowing that the county is saying, yes, this is something we want to see happen and we want to see happen. When we did it, it really was a short-term thing we were doing. And now is the time to really sort of revisit it, sit down with all parties and talk about what it is that we are expecting out of this that we can support without hesitation. So I will not support this. I would really like to see that conversation happen. I also was very surprised. I'm not even sure. I didn't know that I was on the steering committee. I saw this note. And I don't remember how that came about. I'm not trying to be funny. I just don't remember how the selection came about or how the names. Maybe it's because I was chair of Health and Human Services at that time. I have no idea. So that was quite a surprise to me. To see, otherwise I would have been active if I had known that, but I did not. So, that was a surprise. So, just those things, like how did that come about? Are there other people who should be on it? Those kinds of things. We really got to talk about this seriously.
Okay, I've got Rich, Shauna, Anna, and then I'd like to take another go. And Jason.
Thank you, Mark.
Jason, do you want to jump in now or?
I just want to clarify.
He gets to bump, okay?
Sorry,
he gets to bump.
I just want to clarify one thing that I am not suggesting the discussion or conversation be put off. Actually, just the opposite.
Yeah.
This program was created several years ago, focused centrically around Ithaca Commons, and some of the bullet points of that intent was to provide accessible outreach street presence during business hours, respond to community concerns regarding conflict with or distress of individuals in the catchment area, to assist individuals with accessing needed community services, to educate community members and support the compliance of Ithaca Commons rules and city ordinances and encourage respectful use of downtown spaces. That was the initial intent, those bullet points that came from the presentation that was given to the Common Council. What was discussed and what has transformed and what was discussed yesterday was not only that, but expanding of hours, expanding the catchment area, including the jungle, which is definitely not in the commons, and including enhanced coordination with other services and support services. I think that's a very good complement to this program and a good expansion. You know, don't get me wrong. And in fact, my conversations with Amy Hendricks, with Kit Kephart, and with Frank Krupa, they are very much in support of that direction. But what is being proposed is different than what was originally proposed.
Yes.
And I think that my reasoning for the delay in the commitment of funding is twofold. One, it's a very different conversation and expansion of the program. It's also very possible $25,000 is not going to be a reasonable increase. It could be very much a lot more. And I mean that honestly, not as an argument or a complaint point, because if we're going to make an impactful program with the way I think the vision is looked at,
there has to be more dialogue around it. The second piece to my suggestion is what I mentioned several weeks ago and what I'm mentioning it today is you have gone through a very thorough process as a legislative body and a very complimentary one, to be honest with you, my first time going through it. You've spent dedicated time reviewing thorough proposals and thought processes to go through that to finally come to the conclusion you had. Regardless of whether this has come late in the game, and frankly, regardless as to whether or not you adopted in the contingent budget or not, we have to have that conversation with the players. The city has to be an important part of that leadership discussion. And whether this has come at a point to where we haven't had that thorough process, or you haven't. That was the only reason my suggestion was to delay in the funding with it. But no, by no means am I suggesting putting off the conversation, just the opposite. I just wanted to clarify that point. It's about a process and a budget process that you have all committed to, and it's about the programmatic changes in this really the form function of this program. That's all I wanted to clarify.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. Rich, Shauna, Anna, me, and then Deborah.
Thank you, Martha. I support the resolution as proposed that we put this in the contingent fund. And I basically have two reasons. One is that this is a program that has proven itself. It does have broad community support, including support from the public library. And certainly, as soon as the Tompkins Center for History and Culture opens, the community outreach worker will be critical in making sure that that space is used in a good way. It is a program that complements our alternative to incarceration programs, all of our different ATIs, and certainly has worked to reduce some of the people that would have been arrested on warrants, that they can be easily found by the outreach worker and brought to court. So it works from that direction. And I believe the evidence we have in front of us clearly demonstrates the success of the program in terms of numbers of contacts, and they've gone up substantially this year. So I'm comfortable if we do another outreach worker, they will not be sitting on their hands. There's enough going on in our downtown area. The second reason I think we should do this and do it as a money into our contingent fund rather than just saying we're committed to it and we'll do it later is that we're doing this in partnership with the city and the DIA and Cayuga Medical Center. And obviously, as we've seen in this process, that's made it more complicated, and we haven't gotten aligned the way we should have on it. With that said, I think it's really important to have a clear message to our partners that we are committed to this with the money sitting there in the contingent fund. We may change it, and I understand we could do this as a later budget adjustment, but I would much rather have a clear message to our partners that we're doing it and we're there. With that said, I'm happy to work on this in the Public Safety Committee. It could also go to Health and Human Services, but I believe a good examination of the MOU and looking at the whole structure of the steering committee would only benefit the program. I don't think those are overly complicated things to get to solution on. They do need to be looked at, but I think we can do that in short order and arrive where we want to get to. So thank you.
All right. Sean is next.
So I have actually gone back and forth on this a few times, whether I was going to support it or not. I think one thing that is very important for all of us to realize is that this is not LEED. I really don't think that we should even compare this to LEED. LEED is a different program that is working with people at their time of possible arrest. While these people might overlap with the people that Tammy is working with, it's a very different program. So my internal battle was, if we provide money for this, why aren't we providing money for LEED on the county level? It was very helpful having people from the library come and talk to us about what they're seeing and how helpful Tammy's services are. I see Tammy constantly pounding the pavement out on the commons, working with just so many people. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, she can't do that forever. And the one thing that I am concerned about with this proposal and with the existing setup of adding two people or adding another person and then having their hours be 9 to 5, I do think that there should be some flexibility in the hours, which I would want to talk about in either public safety or HHS. But I will support this. I think it's a good program. I know that we don't have all the fine details worked out, but it is something that we need to support.
One thing I would like to start with, I'm concerned about rhetoric that a no vote tonight would be no funding support. I don't think a single person around this table is saying that they're not interested in supporting it. It's literally whether or not we go through a process of figuring it out, and then we can take money out if we really believe a program's amazing. We could take it out a month from now. We could take it out 2 months from now. We're saying, do we do that process first and then we take the money out, or do we put it in contingent earmark it and then do the process and take it out? So, honestly, I don't necessarily see that the two are that different, except for a few things, which are that if we put it in contingent and go through a committee process, I would be concerned and would want to make sure that it is not just a committee process. The process is actually not just us talking to each other. The process is that we need to talk to the city. The city does need to take the lead on this. DIA needs to be involved. So it is not actually a committee process as far as I'm concerned. It's a lot of background process that needs to happen before it comes to the committee, and then the committee evaluates it and moves forward. So, as far as when the money comes out, whether we do it now, whether we do it 2 months from now or 3 months from now, I don't actually think that is important as much as what I'm hearing around this table, which is a tremendous commitment to a program that we really believe in. I don't think we figured out what committee it's supposed to come into, and so that's something else to consider. And then another question I had is, why one time? If we have done this program for 3 years and we all believe in it, so amazing the support, why one time? So I guess that was one of my other questions. The one thing, Rich, that you said, because I agree with Shauna, I've gone back and forth on this. You said something that was maybe the most influential for me this evening, which is, I was there last night for the city budget report. I know they believe in it. That it simply gives a message, that it says, maybe you weren't listening to us tonight, here, you weren't watching the film, but we are committed to doing this. So if it is the general will of the group to put it in contingent, I will support that. But I do want to state my concern that it is not just a committee process.
All right, I'm going to take a turn, then I've got Deborah, Mike Sigler, and then Henry. I would second a lot of what Anna's just said, and the question about why aren't we funding LEAD, we don't have a proposal to fund LEAD. A few of us were asked to meet with the city, 6 months ago, and there was a verbal, will you pay for, it was a big number. We said, that's not how we do this. Here are some other ideas. So that's the last communication we had from the city. We don't have a proposal. We don't read people's minds. That's not our job. We respond to actual proposals. And it was important to me that I heard from Jason this morning or last night that he actually met with David Shapiro very early in September about the deficit and about the need and about the caseload. And he said, well, it sounds like a great program. Would you give us a proposal? Crickets. So when the city says, how come you're not funding X, Y, or Z, and it's like at least three programs I've heard them say, we have a process and it's for a good reason. We need to see what you're actually proposing, and we have our staff review it. We have our committees talk about it. We find out what pieces are missing. So there's that. And we don't have anything on LEAD. We don't have anything on Reach Medical, which I've also heard. Why isn't the county funding Reach Medical? We've not heard any. So on the steering committee, it was presented to us yesterday at Public Safety that it sounded like it was a group that met quarterly. So then Amy Hendricks, who is one of the reps on it, Jason, if she was out of town, maybe you could fill in what she said. We do need, that group does need to exist and needs to have a real hold on the program, and monthly sounds like at least what it needs to do, especially at the beginning. And as right, it, that needs to really be the main partners, really duking out what their proposal is, bring it to us. Do we agree with that, that that's the shape of it? For example, is it really going to be a second person 9 to 5? Would we rather cover weekends and evenings? What about the geography? You know, what? And by the way, this was never intended as an alternative to incarceration. It really was totally not that. Now, you could call that mission creep. It is, but I think it's a good evolution. I think it's been useful. So, but I just want to make sure that's clear. But we really need a deep consensus among the partners about what really we think is the best way to use the program for both positions, or if it grows even larger. So there's no time to do that now. I do think it would send a good message to put it in contingency. But that's the kind of conversation we really need to have. And it can't just be one way or us with family and children. We have to have the partners together with family and children. So, Jason, would you just mention a little bit about what Amy said?
Yeah, I spoke with Amy. Amy has been attending them. She primarily attended it from the youth perspective when she's the youth director, and she's continued to. They've only had one meeting since she's filled her new role. And, you know, for the most part, the committee has been more of a reporting out committee as to the activities. It does not appear that the committee was a program development committee. And I think maybe attendance has fizzled over the past, you know, several years. That said, if there is a renewed interest in the program to expand and to grow and to change its functionality, I think all the parties, I know in my conversation today with Mike, it was, yes, we need to have more participation from the partners as part of this process to help scope, help have that conversation as to where it needs to go. So unfortunately, and I don't know if it's anybody's fault, I don't think the committee has achieved its programmatic drive that it was maybe intended to have or not intended to have. It just hasn't achieved, hasn't accomplished that objective, and it's been more of a reporting out meeting.
Thanks, Jason. Okay, Deborah, Mike Sigler, and then Henry.
Thank you, Martha. It seems to me that this is kind of a pivotal year for this program in a couple of ways. First of all, we're talking about a program that we initially funded for 3 years that's worked out very well, that we're considering making a permanent commitment to. Secondly, at the same time, Family and Children's Child and Family Services, I always get them mixed up. But anyway, you're looking at getting this program expanded in terms of personnel and maybe purpose and area of coverage. So it seems to me that this is the perfect year to sit down and talk to the partners and hammer out some details and get a firm grip on how this program's going to go forward. I want to put the money in contingency so that our partners understand that, yes, we are committed to this program, but I don't want to release that money and go forward with an expansion and consider turning this into a permanent target commitment until we've got the details that we're all concerned about worked out. And so I think Henry's proposal is a good compromise under the circumstances. And I do think that it can be a committee process. If this outreach is going to take place, if we're going to have a group of people sit down and talk to Downtown Ithaca and Child and Family Services and the city, that can be done through the committee process. You know, Shauna and Rich and Martha and Anna can all get together and decide who's going to be on that negotiating team. I'm sure that Jason will be included and someone from staff. I just think this is the easiest way to solve the problem, because I don't want to just sit there and say, oh, yeah, we're going to give you $25,000. Here it is, when it's the one piece that we haven't carefully examined.
Mike Sigler.
So I like this program. I plan on voting for this program. I don't know if I'm going to do it now over the budget, but when this comes up, I'm going to vote for it. And I might vote for it tonight, to be honest with you. Really, the big stumbling block for me here is there are four city legislators, and only two of them are voting for it. If it was like 3-1, this would be done. I'd be like, okay, you know. But I don't know. The biggest problem I have, I guess, the biggest concern is it's hard to build these kind of coalitions between different people putting money in. I mean, getting money out of the city, that's difficult. And the fact that they're on the hook for it, I think, is good. And is this lead? No. But lots of programs start as one thing and then transform it to something else. Okay, so maybe that's good, too. And you know what? I think if this is working, and if us not putting in 25K puts that in jeopardy, I don't really think that's worth it. So I probably will end up supporting this.
You really nailed that customer.
I did just talk myself into it.
That was wonderful to watch.
Thanks for sharing. Keep talking, Mike. I think you'll be sure you're going to vote for it.
I always listen to this.
All right, Henry.
I have a couple of things. One, Deborah talked about a three-year program. If Mike Ellis did not come to Rich about this, this would have just been approved. It would have been a four-year program. It would have been a five-year program. There was no one had oversight over this program to look at, say, oh, 3 years is coming up. We got to do analysis. And so, to some extent, you know, the legislature let it happen. I mean, if Amy was going to the things and other people going to the standing committee meetings, how come they didn't come up with the three-year analysis?
I'm on your side.
I know. I'm just saying. Also, I mean, I will volunteer to be the person to work with the city and the DIA. But, Jason, how long is that going to take?
I don't know.
You know the scope of things. You know, you mean the plastic bag ban. You put out 6 months.
Yep.
How long, you know, with Shauna's marijuana thing, it took months. How long is this going to take?
Henry, you're about to get a good vote here. I'm not, just saying. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. Jason, go ahead. You want to answer?
You're asking a question that involves many more partners where we're a minority group in. So let's just play this out for one second. You've got a city that's got to contribute funding and now has to come to the table and lead this discussion. You've got a nonprofit that's the major stakeholder here that's holding it and is going to be managing the project. You've got Downtown Alliance, which is actually now possibly taking a back seat to the center focus of a new program. And then you've got a medical center, which is now also going to contribute, and then us. And then you're talking about changing the scope of a project. So you're not really continuing an existing program. You're expanding it drastically and changing the outcomes of it. You're asking me how long it's going to take? I have no idea. Because what you're not asking to do is you're not asking to continue an existing program. You're asking to expand to something completely different. So I don't know how much money is going to take to do it. I don't know how much time that's going to take, because you're talking about taking an issue that is not a simple issue, and you're expanding it, and you're growing upon it. If this is just about putting funding towards the existing program, not changing the scope of it, then you know what you're going to get. But you're asking to expand the program to what it's not right now.
That's exactly the issue. I'm not asking to expand it to cover the entire city or anything else. I'm just asking to right-size the program, to basically add another worker to the program, have the program stay exactly the same. And the reason I'm doing it for 1 year is so we can study it and come up with a resolution during the time. But instead of them saying, okay, let's wait and only fund you after you have that, that could be 8 months, it could be 9 months. And what's the program supposed to do in terms of their losses?
So that's different than what has been discussed tonight, and that's different than what was discussed yesterday.
Well, that is what I discussed tonight, and that's what I discussed yesterday, that basically we just want to add one other position to the program. We don't want to expand the program any. We just want to relieve the pressure of one worker doing the work of four people. And that's it.
All right. Henry, let me just say, we're voting on funding that can't possibly be released until January 1st. This is a 2019 budget.
Right.
If you're, I hear a sense of urgency that you want money to go sooner than that. If
no,
that's something, that's
no, I want it to go January 1st. But if we wait and not fund it until all these things are met, it may not be until next August when the funds are released, or next whenever. We won't know when, because again we got all these moving parts and all these parties, and we don't know when the funding will be released. And in fact, we don't know how much funding will be released. We won't know anything.
Okay.
And so I'm saying, well, look, we know $25,000 will get us another worker on January 1st. They can hire another worker and do that. And so that's all I'm asking for. And then the other time next year, the reason I ask for one-time funding is that next year we can do all this analysis. We can work together. We can meet and say, okay, maybe that one person, that one job, maybe we should expand it. Maybe we should cover a large area. We should cover whatever, and that we need to expand to three people, four people.
Okay, so let me just clarify, and then I'm going to go to Rich, Ann, and Leslin. I want to clarify the motion so we know what we're talking about. Are you saying put it in the contingent fund, but not have any contingency for which it gets released? I mean, because then you want to just put it in, say, administration, where the first $20,000 is.
Okay. Well, then fine. I want to put it in administration then, where the first $20,000 is.
I mean, it's important we get clarity on this so people know what they're voting on, right? I'm not just trying to talk you into one thing or another. So you don't want any particular review or whatever review. You want it to make sure it happens by January 1st. And
yes, that's why I did not put in contingency. I put it in the contingent fund, but I did not put any contingencies on it.
Well, then. Okay, that's what that means, actually.
Okay.
You know, if it's in a contingency.
Okay,
that's fine. If it's in the contingent fund, it means that it and usually we say specifically, we want to hear such and such, and then we will approve it if such and such is met. So okay. You want to, are you saying you want it to go to be added to the, was it $20,000 in the
right.
administration?
Yeah, if the intent is just to add funding to the existing program as is, then it would go to the $20,000 that's in county admin now. It would not go into the contingent.
So be added. We'd add 25 to the 20.
So it'd be a $45,000 budget.
And right now the 20 that's there is also one-time funded?
No, or that's a target.
That's now a target.
Yeah.
That's not target. Okay, so this would be adding 25 one-time onto that. We do that kind of thing. You know, that's so. Dan, is that, will you second in that? Are you good with that, or you want?
The motion, as I understand it, is to put in a contingency fund, which requires the legislature to vote again. So there's no conditions on it at this moment, except that the legislature will have to approve it in the future. That's how I understand contingent fund.
Yeah, but Henry now is saying.
Well, no. I mean, that's what I want. Basically, contingent fund. And the legislature just have to vote on it. But we could come back on the first meeting and vote on it, correct? But no standards.
Well, we could, but usually we express certain criteria so that we can evaluate and decide how to vote on something. If you tell me, let's park this for a minute and see if Rich, Ann, Leslin, and Mike Sigler. Okay, so we're unclear what the shape of the actual resolution is at this moment. Okay, Rich.
Yeah, I think we're okay, Henry.
Okay.
Put it in contingency fund. We need to trust our process. We need to trust each other that we will give this a good look, and we will move it through in a reasonable time period. But I think there's lots of reasons that we need to be clear on this, and that we build the support in this body that this program is moving forward in a good way, meaning that there is a renewed look at the steering committee. There's a renewed look at the MOU. Frankly, we should be looking at how this fits into our budget process, in that this was a bit of an orphan because
It didn't sit anywhere where a department head was sitting in that chair telling us about it each year. We got reports from Tammy Baker that were really helpful to committees, but we didn't think about it in terms of the numbers, and that's why we're doing it so late in our process. But with that said, I think we can get there. I'm quite confident we can work with our partners. And Anna, you're absolutely correct. This is not something we send to a committee. We talk about, and it's solved. This is the more difficult process of working with another municipality and outside groups and making sure there's full alignment there. But I believe we can do that in a reasonable time period. And frankly, I would love to see us get this done so that when 2019 yes. comes upon us, we've got this issue resolved.
Very eloquent. Thank you.
I've got Ann Corman, Leslin, Mike Saylor, and then Dave.
I concur with what Rich said and with what a lot of other people said. I think we've heard a lot of concerns, and I would like those or most of those or so that we can mostly come to a consensus about all the things that we would like to see happen. I would vote for it if it's contingent on us voting again, but it would not be probably just another vote. As Rich said, there would be a lot of other things that need to happen, and as Jason explained also, this is a long process, a lot of things that involve a lot of other parties besides the people that are sitting here.
All right, Leslin.
Well, I was hoping what you were trying to do, Martha, would answer my question because I was getting relatively confused about what it is we're doing. And it might have and it might not have. Henry, there's something else that you also brought up is in your statements. You said we have a program that's also operating at a loss and we need to fix that. But I understood that this was not to fix a loss. I guess I'm not sure what loss we're talking about. So is it loss because we're not meeting as many clients, or
can we have Mike Ellis address
it.
That issue?
Yeah, Mike presented yesterday that there's a $28,000 deficit. Henry,
Henry. Loss we're talking about?
If you want to say something, you raise your hand. So I'm just letting you know. It was $28,000 operating loss that they have sort of discovered. So, Mike, did you want to come up and...
Is that the loss Henry is referring to? I just want clarification. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. Although they basically, the last 3 years, the program's running at a deficit of $72,000.
No,
this year the deficit is $28,000.
Okay, why don't we have Mike Ellis? And please remind us your title. You said Karen Shashera was the interim, so I don't know. I didn't get your title, Mike.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I'm Director of Youth and Outreach Services,
okay.
So I'm the program manager for the Community Outreach Worker Program. So the agency budget is not technically my purview. I give advice to it and recommend items, so I can tell you what I know about the loss from my perspective. That Henry's correct that over the 3 years, so actually let me take a step back. In the MOU, in the original MOU and every annual MOU since, Family and Children's has said that our contribution to the overall funding strategy would be to cover any amount over the funds that were pledged by our partners. So that's something we've done in good faith. We're not asking for any support in terms of paying back past losses, but it has been operating at a loss that was greater than that it is sustainable right now. In balance with our other programs, the other priorities of the agency, it ended up being quite a bit more and has been going up steadily each year. So when Henry's speaking about that, the reason why we're not asking for just a straight doubling of the commitments that have been made by our partners, but doubling in a little extra, is to help us come closer to being able to continue to uphold our part of the partnership in a way that's more sustainable for our nonprofit.
Okay, so just to be clear, your original commitment, the agency's original commitment under a different executive director, was that the agency would cover overhead. It seems
correct
that over the years that has become more burdensome than they realize or than they are able, than you're able to cover. So to say it's a loss is not quite the same thing, because it was intended that the agency would cover that. All right, Leslie, you are certainly not...
Okay, thank you. That's why I wanted to clarify what loss we're talking about, because I thought when I understood the explanation of the motion, it wasn't to take care of that part of it. Well, what I'm hearing from Mike, and I'm certainly in no way would I want you all to be operating at a deficit, and things happen. You don't always anticipate, you know, the right number, and numbers change over the years. So now what is being asked for is not only for a new position, but to also help support overhead so that you don't continue going into a deeper hole.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, I was getting
that's not what I understood. Okay.
Oh, okay. Alrighty then.
How much will it take?
This is why
to
we
hire
need this conversation.
I mean, if we do the 25, what I hear is that there's the new 65,000. Right? Is that less than what you need to hire a new person, counting fringes and all?
I'm not clear what you're referring to as the new 65,000.
If the city's got 25, DIA's got 15, we add 25, that adds up to 65,000 new dollars, right, into the program.
Yes.
So since we don't have this in writing, this, again, is one of the problems of not having an actual proposal, is that the equivalent of one salary plus fringe, or is some of that 65 covering the overhead? And if
yes.
So, how much?
That would be 10,000.
So the person you'd be hiring is a 55,000, including fringe, and overhead is 10. So, right? Is that correct?
No. Yeah. Well, yes, 55 with salary and fringe. Again, you're asking me questions that are really outside of my pay grade, but I'm doing my best to answer them, Martha. So, yes, if you're talking about salary plus benefits, that's included in the 55. If that's what you're saying, the 10,000 would presumably be above that. That would be the overhead.
The new hire uses up 55 of 65. 10,000 would go into family and children to help with the overhead. I'm just trying to clarify.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Leslie, were you finished with the things you wanted to ask or say? Or?
At this point.
You can come back. Okay.
No. I'm fine. It's just that all of this is making me see even more so the need for this conversation we're
right.
talking about, that it just has to happen.
Totally agree.
I'm trying to do math on the floor.
All right. Mike Sigler, Dave McKenna, and then Anna.
I'll be quick. To be honest, Rich and Henry, I would have gone for the whole tamale. I don't know why we're talking contingent. It's $25,000 one-time money. Spend the money. Ask for the money. Because frankly, it seems to me this legislature has gotten to this idea that we're going to put in a contingency, so we're not really spending it. We're going to spend the money. Do it now. It's one-time money. It's 25 grand. I trust that over the next year, you guys will go into meetings and hash this program out, because it's clearly a program that's working. And frankly, it's not like we're giving it to some rando person off the street. We're giving it to a program that does have oversight through Family and Children's. They're pretty well established in our community. They have a board of directors. We know a lot of the members on that board of directors who do oversight. So, but this is where I'm coming from. It's not my amendment to make, but that's frankly what I would have done. So,
Dave.
Whatever Mike said, I double that. Okay? quite frankly, it's a darn good program. It's working well for everybody involved. And I think we should put $25K in the administration budget for this year and hash out the issues, which are obviously going to take a long time because we spent a long time talking about it here, and just move on.
Is that an amendment?
Yes.
I'll second that.
There you go.
All right. So the amendment, so it's an amendment to the amendment. Understand, Henry's motion is an amendment to the resolution about the budget. Dave's made an amendment, and Dan has seconded, the amendment being simply to put 25 into one-time funding into administration for this program, right?
One time.
For this year and over this year, that the contingency is the administration and whatever committees work this out with the city and DIA.
But that the county ledge does not vote again.
Right. The, no, the we money put the money in, we commit the money right now.
What?
We commit the money right now.
Okay.
In small bills.
$1 bills.
Untraceable.
Dave, so it's one-time money, right?
One-time money.
Okay. So.
But maybe he means with a caveat, not a contingency.
Yes. All right. Caveat is not in our budget language. Okay, the question is that a friendly amendment? Dan seconded, so that Henry? Yes. Okay, so that's the main motion. Got it? All right. Anna, and
well,
then.
That's not the main motion. That's the amendment.
No, just.
The amendment. It's the main.
That's the amendment to the budget.
Right. It's the amendment to the budget, but we don't have to do the tiered amendments to the amendments. This is a friendly.
Madam
Chair. It's a friendly.
I would like.
Yeah, Dan.
I'm not going to consider it friendly. I would like to vote separately on that amendment because if it becomes a main amendment and it fails,
okay.
We're in a different place.
Right. Okay. So Dave has made a motion that would amend Henry's amendment. Is there a second to Dave's amendment?
I second Dave's.
Okay. So it's not friendly. Got it. You haven't? That's all that matters, right? Okay. I still have Anna and Deborah.
There's two things that I wanted to say. One is the reason that we're hashing out so much here is because we didn't have this go through our process and we didn't have a proposal. So let's just acknowledge that. But the other thing that I did want to acknowledge is that Mike did say that to us in committee, and I want to respect and appreciate how much work that you've put in to get this to us. He did say, I am sorry, I recognize this is not in your process. I really appreciate that you guys are considering it. So I really don't want family and children's to be seen as they didn't understand, they didn't care, they're bringing it to us last second. Just so that is for everybody here, but also everybody watching, this is not an issue with family and children's necessarily. This is an entire process that hasn't necessarily been communicated between us internally, between the different funders. No fault of anyone's. We're discussing the best path forward. I just want to make that clear so that you don't feel like you never want to come to this building ever again. So making that point.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Deborah.
I don't freaking believe this, but I am about to be more fiscally conservative than the chair of the County Republican Party.
Being frugal doesn't mean you're quite fiscally conservative.
I realize that this is an excellent program. I realize that in the scheme of trying to finance a $30 million airport, $25,000 is not much. However, I really think that we owe it to our constituents and our county taxpayers to do our homework. And we clearly have not had time to do it on this particular issue, which is why I'm going to vote against Mr. McKenna's amendment. Sorry, David.
I'm going to weigh in on that and agree with Deborah that and this is not that I don't trust staff to figure this out, but these are policy issues. It's a policy question. Do we want, and it really became very clear in public safety yesterday, it's a very different program if you have two people working 9 to 5 rather than having one person 9 to 5 and the other person, I don't know, noon to 8 or weekends or something. Those are really different things, and you have really different goals and really different outcomes. And that those are policy questions that I think really should be clarified before we spend the money, because we have found ourselves in pickles like this later on when the different parties thought something else was intended. And you got, oh, wait, I thought it was for this. Oh, no, I thought it was for that. That's why we should do that work first. I really, really feel that strongly. Now, I saw Annie and Leslin. I wasn't sure. Well, that's a good enough reason. Okay.
Would you like to call the question?
Now, is there anybody else who wants to speak on the amendment to the amendment? Okay. The motion that we're about to vote on is that the $25,000 one-time funding should be put into administration. Now, and we heard it's not necessarily just to hire a new person, but the idea is it's $25,000 with staff working with the partners to figure it out. Is that right?
Yeah, over the course of the next year to put it in next year's budget as a target issue.
1 year at a time. You mean 2019?
That's the basic idea. I don't think we're going to work it out that quickly, and I'd like to get – we've already committed money for 3 years to this program. 1 more year is not going to kill us.
Right, but you're saying $25,000 this year.
That's in distress.
One-time money.
Got it. Ready to vote? Does everybody understand that?
Yep.
Ready to vote. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. Opposed? At 7-7, that amendment fails. So what's in, Leslin, you want to take a break?
No, just keep going.
All right. Maybe we're ready to vote on the first amendment, which was $25,000 into the contingent fund, one-time money. Is that clear? Is that right? Okay. All in favor of that motion, of that amendment? Any opposed? That's 12 yes, 2 no. That is agreed to. All right. I tell you what. Let's take a break. It is past our usual break. I will take, please, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. We'll be in recess, and we'll come back. So let's try to get going.
So are we going to vote on you now?
And what?
Are we going to vote on you now? Or did we vote on the other?
We still have the main motion on the budget. And I have Kevin graciously gave me a crib sheet here about what this amendment means. Right now, so we've just decided to add $25,000 to the draw on reserves and the draw. Before this motion, we have voted to draw $584,896 from reserves. That is in one-time funding in the budget. This adds $25,000 to that. So the new draw on reserves is $609,896. And in the resolution, it does change one of the numbers. In the fourth resolve, the increase in local spending is 3.55%, not 3.52. Have that right, Kevin?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Sorry, could you repeat that 3.55?
Yeah, when it says I don't have a line here.
Got
so
I got it now. Thank you.
The third from the bottom resolve. Okay. All right. So we are with that amendment. Are there any other amendments to the proposed 2019 county budget and 2019 to 2023 capital budget?
Just scratching
your head. That might be allowed. Okay. Are there?
I was seeing if there's any more candidates.
Any discussion or any other amendments? Ready to vote?
Roll call, please.
All right. Let's have a roll call.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Ms. Dawson?
Yahoo, yes.
Mr. Granison? Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. All right.
Thank you, Deborah.
Mike Lane, you want to wrap it up a little? Some nice words?
Well, I think all the words have been said. We're there, and I think we need to continue to explain this to the folks out there. Folks are listening on TV, and the folks that we meet in the grocery store and everywhere else, and let them know that we're trying to do things to keep taxes down and still provide the services that are so important to people across the county.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you for leading our work through these several months. We really appreciate your leadership on this committee and the work of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee all year long. And a special thanks to Kevin and to Jason and all our department heads for a tremendous job. We really appreciate it. All right, let's see. Where are we? Go back to our committee list. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you very much. We met on October 18th. We had a report from Jason on old jail renovations. Also had a report by Mike Hall on the airport renderings just after the groundbreaking ceremony. And another comment was that all the planes that are currently going to Dulles are full, which is a really good thing, especially for us. We had a report from Cornell on the radiation and chemical deposit sites that extend into the airport property, and there Mr. Murphy stated that the plumes are decreasing in size. And beyond that, I have one resolution, Resolution R, a budget adjustment and appropriation of on-spent funds from 2017 and prior years to various accounts of departments that report to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, ID 8098, and I would move that.
Second and by. Deborah. Any discussion? Resolution R. That's packet page 46. All right, there's a short form roll call.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Are there any noes? That's unanimous. Thank you. And did we already do F?
Yes. That concludes my report. F and I will meet here on the 15th, I believe.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you. We met on November 2nd. We heard a lot of what you folks have heard tonight from Mike Hall regarding the things that the governor was asking for from Albany in the expansion of the airport project and the extra funding that might be necessary. You heard him talk about the canopy and other things that they were talking might need to be added to the project. Could add cost to it, but they're still in discussion, so we'll have to see where that goes. We had Dryden Town Supervisor Jason Leifer come in, and we began talking a little bit more about the Route 13 study. He said the town is quite interested in being a member of the committee that we put together to talk about this because they have land use and have been trying to think about issues over the years of access on the corridor, the number of driveways, access roads, et cetera. And we talked a little bit more about the ride-hailing services issue that's been hanging around for going on 2 years. We intend to put this to bed next meeting with a resolution. And if you have any different feelings about this, remember it's all started as to whether or not we should prohibit ride hailing in Tompkins County. Over almost 2 years ago now, it was decided not to take any action to see what happened. We did earlier this year invite the ride hailing services and the taxi cab operators in to talk to us. Not a lot has changed, and I think that the committee will offer a resolution for your consideration. As I said, putting this to bed, probably, I can't speak for everybody, probably recommending that we don't take any action to do away with ride hailing in Tompkins County. The Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council has been working on its long-range plan, transportation plan, and held two sessions yesterday at the library for folks to come in and look at displays and talk about things. I went to the one toward night. I think Deborah Dawson went earlier. It sounded to me like hers was a little more active than mine was. Do you want to speak to that, Deborah?
Sure. Thank you, Mike. There were about 20 to 25 people there, and Fernando just took questions from people, and of course Scott was there too, representing TCAT. A lot of the comments had to do with trail plans for the trail system. People were interested in knowing what, if anything, the county was willing to do to help them acquire easements, get their trail systems up and running and connected. I can't say that I knew that there was much of anything that we could or should be doing in that regard. People were also concerned about pavement markings for complete streets and especially bicycles. And I guess the other thing, of course, was the perennial, why aren't there more frequent buses and better service in the periphery? And, you know, certainly I at least tried to explain how expensive buses were and the problem with the bus garage. I don't know, Dave was there too. What did I miss anything?
I think you covered most of it.
Yeah, those were the three major issues, the trails, the pavement markings for bicyclists, and better TCAT.
I would just add that on some of the displays, some of the ones I found most interesting were the traffic count maps that had showed different traffic count during peak hours in different colors on the map, and I thought that was pretty interesting, not only like Route 13, but also downtown streets and Meadow Street and those kinds of things.
Can I add something?
Go ahead.
One very interesting suggestion that someone made was trying to figure out some sort of app that would allow people who commute in from the periphery and from outside the county to hook up with other people who are commuting from the same area so that they could ride share. I don't know how we would do that, but it was pointed out that if we've got 15,000 in-commuters daily, then we're likely to also have 40 to 50,000 empty car seats going back and forth every day, and if we could fill some of those, that would relieve some of our problems. I don't know how to make that happen, but it seems like a worthwhile thing to investigate.
Well, IDCTC tried to do a van pool program a few years ago. It didn't work. I mean, it just didn't. There weren't enough takers, you know, with sort of setting up vans. It may be that now people are more used to that kind of app, and you know. So I don't know. Was that suggestion made at the meeting?
Yeah, it was. It was made from a member of the public. I asked Fernando if he thought that would fit in with mobility access grant that Dwight had gotten for us, and Fernando said he thought it would. Dwight came in later, and I mentioned to the gentleman who had brought the topic up that was Dwight, and he should talk to Dwight, and he just said, oh, I've already talked to Dwight, so I don't know where we are with this, but it seemed like an interesting idea to pursue.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Mike?
No.
right. Leslie and then Henry.
This probably is not for Transportation Committee, but I just wondered, has there been any conversation about the buses on Green Street and how they might be affecting TCAT, or maybe it's a TCAT conversation since with the closure of the bus station?
Dan, you want to jump in?
I'm sorry. Do you want to go first?
I just answered the question. I didn't happen to hear that.
Oh, okay.
Be glad to hear.
We've had some discussion in TCAT. There's been some issues. The Green Street solution was not ideal. There's not quite enough room for all the buses that are there at the maximum time. And it's taken a while for people to get used to it, the intercity bus operators as well as the public. So there are certain times that there have been issues where buses are basically double parked, which is not good on a lot of levels, and some issues with where passengers are waiting and such. And I think these problems can be worked out. One problem that I see is that TCAT has become the default problem solver there, which really, isn't quite their role. So there are some issues. I think they're going to work out over time. And it's just really good to recognize that solution was really, maybe a 95% solution, and we're always going to have 5% problems there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jason, do you want to add in from the meeting we had with Svante and Dan?
Yes. I can also say I know we've been in Frank and I have been in discussion with the city because they've moved one of the buses, well, what was expected to be an ad-need basis in front of the mental health building has turned into a little bit more than an ad-need basis. So part of our discussion has been the mental health building uses that space in front for folks that have have mobility challenges. And it's not at a set time. It's kind of throughout the day. So we've voiced our concern from day one that we want to ensure that a space in front of the building is available for folks who have mobility challenges. Since this has kind of developed a little bit more, two things have arisen. One, it's been a little bit more than overflow catchment area. It's been more consistent. And two, the public health lobby has now become a public access visiting restroom use type issue, which is not the intention of it as well. So we've articulated those concerns to the city. They have also tried to work out a preliminary design, which I think they're going to try to continue to work through the fall and into the winter, where that extension that kind of goes in between the mental health building as a Tioga Street extension, the nub there, they've talked about maybe creating more of a sidewalk and gutter extension to allow for some drop-off area for folks that can access mental health with mobility concerns. So we're talking on how maybe that area can be expanded or improved a little bit to at least allow for mobility challenge to folks to be able to access the building. As far as the public coming in out of the building, what I've advised Frank and what they're working on is just having more prominent signage and directing some of the folks in the bus companies of, this is not a public, this is not a public restroom. In that sense, it's a secure facility to a certain extent. So we'll work through some of those challenges. But the city has been responsive to some of the need. And I really let Frank take a lot of response. He's kept me in the loop on a lot of it just to make sure that the communication is going. And the city's been pretty good about getting back to us on things.
And the city is worried about the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
It was one holiday, or Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day. It was some weekend where there was a lot. There were extra buses, and people were.
Yeah.
That was a main problem. Okay.
They're still. I think they're still working through it. And obviously, the library had some concerns that I went to the first meeting to ensure that the library's concerns got expressed about book drop off if they were to shift. The temporary or it's not parking, but standing area over for book drop-off, that there was going to be adequate book drop-off built into the other side of the street. So I think that is still being worked through. But I think the city recognizes there's some challenges to work through with it, and they've been responsive from our end.
Henry?
Yeah, I still see people parking in the same spot for the library drop-off. But also Common Council discussed last night that for the intercity bus system that they were getting, there's like $200,000 worth of improvements that they have to do. So they were going to charge intercity buses. Svante wanted $15 a ride, but they said nothing a ride, but then they compromised at $5 a bus. So he thought they were going to get that and able to be able to do improvements or signage or whatever they have to do in that area.
$5 a passenger?
No, $5 a bus.
A bus, okay.
Thank you, Wally.
What?
Thank you.
That's money from the operators?
Yes. Okay. I also have a question for Mike about, I know that I went to the to the transportation meeting when the taxi cabs came in, and they were alleging that the Ubers and Lyfts were basically getting together and jacking up their prices by using premium time. Did you guys ever?
The allegation was that the drivers were going on Facebook and they were holding off
right.
until the price per ride went up before they would sign on. We did discuss that with the Lyft people, and they were they said that is not their policy, and they were investigating that. I haven't heard any more about that.
Right, because I know that initially they had cheap rides from downtown to IC, but then I know that the rides became like $20 to $25 at premium times to ride up to IC from downtown. And so I was wondering whether there was any more talk about that behavior.
No, we haven't had any more about that, not since Lyft came in.
Okay,
so we have six more committees to go and an executive session. Anything else for transportation?
No.
All right, thanks very much, Mike. Government Operations, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. Because of the scheduling and the calendar and the Thanksgiving holiday, we've decided to combine our November and December meetings. So the next meeting will be Monday, December 3rd at 3 o'clock.
And nothing else in November, December, that's it?
Correct.
Okay. Is that it? Did we already do your rollover?
Let's do a resolution. I'd like to move Resolution S, Budget Adjustment and Appropriation of Unspent Funds from 2017 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Government Operations Committee.
Seconded by Deborah. Discussion? Okay, short form roll call.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Anything else, Dan? All right, any questions? Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
Just one thing that I would add that would have been in our privilege of the floor. Right at this moment, there is a fire in California that is covering 80 football fields per minute. So I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that that is killing a tremendous amount of animals, wildlife, communities. The community of Paradise has been completely evacuated. That is happening right now as we speak. So I just want us to be aware of that and send our prayers. As far as PDEC, we have a meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And we have one topic on the agenda. We will be discussing two resolutions, review what is the proposal that has been made by the Cayuga Power Plant to the DEC to convert one of their stacks to natural gas that will be fueled by a natural gas that would be trucked in. And they currently have a proposal to the DEC. So there is a resolution, one resolution that is requesting, that is urging the DEC to oppose this proposal. And then there is a second resolution that is urging the DEC to make a positive declaration of risk and to request a full EIS. So we will be considering both of them. I want everyone here to note that there is an email that has been sent out to all of you. The Cayuga Power Plant was invited to come to this meeting. This meeting was set because it was a time that they would be able to come. But the owners of the company decided that because of a lot of the other projects that they're working on in the Northeast, that it would not be a good time for them to have a public meeting. So they sent a letter instead. And that letter is in your mailbox. So please do read that. And if you all want to attend, you're all invited, 9 o'clock tomorrow here in the chambers. And that's my full report.
Thank you. And you have a resolution. Did we do a T?
We did for that.
Katie. Okay. Yeah. All right. Any questions for Alan? All right. Thank you very much. Mike Lane, I think we covered budget, capital, and personnel.
Well, let me just mention that we will meet in regular committee on November 13th. At 4 o'clock p.m.
Okay, thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We shared a load of WDIC, and so I want to ask Ann Corman to give the report from the last committee meeting because I was not there. I was away.
Thank you. I'll do the best I can. I wasn't totally prepared to do it, but I'll try, and Anna was there, so she'll feel free to jump in. So we talked a bit about the climate survey, and I know one of the things coming up is people probably saw an email. I know I didn't quite see it. Kathy reminded me of it, but there's a I think most people saw it by now, trying to have a meeting with the legislators and department heads coming up in December. And is there anything else about the climate survey?
No, focusing on what parts of it were important with respect to diversity and inclusion moving forward, what information we wanted disseminated, and what breakdown we wanted to see explored to encourage actual diversity and inclusion moving forward with respect to retention, both seeking jobs and how we do seek people for jobs, but also retention of those that we have.
Thank you. And so some of the conversations, too, after you left and after the meeting ended, we were talking about wanting more information, and I spoke with Jason just briefly, actually kind of by text, but just trying to see if maybe we can figure out how to get more information, maybe some more figures on that from the appropriate department so we know kind of what we're looking at. For now. And then Michael Woody came very late to the meeting from personnel and as far as to talk to us about recruitment and exit interviews. And he said that he was, I didn't really get a sense of why the as many exit interviews aren't being done. So and also recruitment, he said he was having trouble finding enough time and money in the budget to do as much as he would like to do. But again, that was at the end of the meeting, so I asked him to come to the next one. So if we don't want him to come to the next one, if we could just let him know, but to come, because it sounds like we're just starting on that conversation. And is there anything else? I was going to go into the meetings for.
I think just the one thing that's really important to note is that we all felt that that committee would be a great committee to build a closer relationship with HR because it really could serve as a support to HR in the process of doing diversity and inclusion within hiring. Really saw themselves, the committee saw themselves as an advisory board of sorts, a brainstorming entity, and it could be a really positive relationship.
All right, thank you. And for the November meeting, that's on the 28th. And then for the December meeting, I talked with Leslyn. We're going to look at maybe having that earlier in December if possible. And stay tuned for that.
Okay, and about the retreat, department head and legislator retreat.
Right.
Kathy,
the date is tentatively set for December 12th, but you should be receiving an email in the next couple days, I think.
Kathy asked me about December 6th as one of the options. That's the Dorothy Cotton Institute Gala. So I said, I want to go to that. So December 12th is probably the night, 5:30 to 8:30?
No, 5:30 to 7:30, I believe.
Leslie.
Thanks, and thank you, Anna, for holding it down. I do want to add... thanks to Irene Kehoe of Assessment and Christina Dravis of our emergency response. Oh, good Lord. For working diligently to coordinate our fall reading and discussion group. We had a number of employees sign up. The topic this year was understanding racism. And my understanding is that we have a full complement of 14 or 15 employees across various departments and levels who are participating. So I really do want the record to show big thanks from Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee to the two of them for organizing, taking this on and making it happen, and to the employees for seeing the seriousness in it and signing up to participate. The first session was October 24th, then the 31st, the 7th, I think there's one more, November 7th, I think there's one more session left. There are four sessions, and so far I understand it's been going very, very well. So thanks again to the two of them.
All right. Thanks very much. Any questions from anybody else? All right. Thank you. The Housing Committee met this afternoon to talk about to pass the resolution that we did on the consent agenda about the CDBG grant. We haven't had a full committee meeting since the last legislature meeting. I would just give a shout out and thanks to the staff that's working on our CDBG proposal for $767,000, which they're working. David West expects to have it submitted a day or two early in next week's deadline. And there was also an audit by the state. They came in, they do this periodically, and Megan McDonald and Darielle Drake in planning were on the hook for documenting where every dollar goes, and apparently they got just a rave review from the state, and especially Darielle's really excellent work documenting all the loans and the payments that come back in. So I just want to let people know about that. The next meeting is for the Housing Committee is, I don't know when, it's a couple of weeks. I don't have the date in front of me. But so that's it. Any questions for that?
Yeah, when is the meeting?
All right, I'll look. It's on a Monday. It's a couple of Mondays from now.
The third Monday?
Okay. Yeah, the 19th. Kathy's got it. 3 o'clock, right here. Public Safety Committee. Rich John's here.
Thank you, Martha. Public Safety met yesterday afternoon, and we had a very nice presentation from Family and Children's Center on the community outreach worker. I could speak at length on that if anybody wanted me to, but I can move on. We also had, I thought, a really good discussion about the resolution that's been going through the Health and Human Services Committee, and we brought it to Public Safety on stating a position for New York State on legalization of marijuana. And while it's clearly just an advisory resolution, it's certainly up to New York State to make their decision, I believe it's important that we have a full discussion of this issue at the local level. And it was, I think, a helpful point in that progress yesterday. We had a couple visitors come in, and we heard from several of the staff. And we just had a very good discussion about where that resolution is at right now. I believe it's going to go back to Health and Human Services, and we as a legislature probably will be looking at it on the 20th. Is that right, Shauna? The only other thing I'd mention is we get reports from the various departments that report to public safety, and one of them is emergency response. And one of the things they've been providing us with is a list of all the calls by type of call. And one jumped out at me, which is the category is overdose, poisoning, ingestion. And there were 34 calls to emergency response. Probably many of those were overdose related to opiates or other drugs. But I think there's two things to see there. One is it's really good they're calling, that they are seeking medical attention and getting it hopefully in time. But also the number 34 is quite a lot. this problem is in our community, and it is something, you know, we're really just struggling with. So I just wanted to point that out. The next meeting is December 5th.
Rich, was that 34 in a month?
Yes. That was September.
Any questions? Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich? Okay. Health and Human Services Committee. Shauna Black, Chair.
We have not had a meeting since our last legislature meeting. Our next, our upcoming meeting will be Friday, November 16th at 8:30 a.m. Sorry, it's very early. It was the only time with the holidays that we could meet. And we will have a full update on the Office of Human Rights. We will also, as Rich mentioned, be voting on the new resolution that has a bit more information, talks about some more of the unintended consequences of possibly legalizing marijuana. And it's a bit more robust, so I think it covers some more terrain that we didn't have in our initial resolution. Also, I wanted to make an announcement that the deadline for applying for the Human Rights Commission is December 1st. We do have a handful of applicants that have already turned in their applications. We are still seeking others. So if you're interested, please make sure to apply before December 1st. We plan on reviewing that applicant pool. My understanding is that we will, as a committee, be doing interviews for people that have applied, and we will make decisions for the new Human Rights Commission.
Thank you, Shauna. Questions for Shauna? Would it be possible to get a list of the people who've applied so far?
To go to the...
To legislators.
Sure.
I'm thinking of somebody, but if they've already applied, it won't...
Yeah, I think Kathy Covert has a list of those.
That's great. Thanks very much. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Shauna. Then can I get a motion on the minutes for October 16th, legislature meeting? Are you stretching, Ann, or was that like...
Stretching your head.
I'm seconding.
All right. Deborah moves and Annie seconds. Any discussion of the minutes? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Kathy, do we need to approve the minutes of the public hearing?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get a motion on that. That's back with the end of the check. Moved by Mike Sigler, seconded by Anna. Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Then I would like to have a motion to go into executive session. I do expect that we may come out of the session and take action on an item or two. So with that understanding, this is for real estate negotiations and labor negotiations. Motion to go into executive session. Moved by Leslin, seconded by Amanda. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, we'll take a 5-minute break to turn off the cameras. Thank you.